What's up? The Pro Football Weekly Podcast is back, and we are so happy you are with us again. I'm your host, Arthur Arkish, and we're breaking down the draft, guys. 8 days left. Greg Gabriel coming back on the show shortly to talk wide receivers, cornerbacks, and his first mock draft. A reminder that if you haven't seen it yet, head to profootballweekly.com. Check that out, along with all of our video scouting reports and features. My colleague Kevin Fishbane just started a really nice series in the last week of the draft, looking at some of the late risers who were not invited to the combine. So I would strongly encourage you to check that out and peruse everything we have going on over at the website. And before I bring on Greg Gabriel, I do need to refamiliarize you with our awesome sponsor, Loot Crate. On a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles, Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. Whether you're shopping for the geek in your life or if you are that geek, Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming. Every month, there's a different theme and new exclusive items you can only get with Loot Crate. Treat yourself every month or give the gift of geeking out to a friend or loved one. For April, join us as we salute some of our favorite mystery solvers with items from Stranger Things, Batman, The X-Files, and Marvel's Jessica Jones. One lucky subscriber will also win a mega crate, including signed copies of Jessica Jones, Alias, Volumes 1 through 4. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate, and when the cutoff happens, that's it, it's over. Make sure to head to www.lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter the code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription today. All right, and thank you again to our friends at Loot Crate. And one more reminder, I need to kind of get all the administrative stuff out of the way out top. If you haven't headed to iTunes already to download and subscribe, rather, to the Pro Football Weekly podcast, that would be really cool if you did that. And leave us a review while you're there. Comments, likes, tell your friends and families. The PFW podcast is gaining steam, and we want you to continue helping that be continue being a part of that process. Excuse me. All right. So before we bring on Greg Gabriel and do a little bit more draft talk, I have a 2-round mock draft up at ProFootballWeekly.com that published Monday afternoon, and would be very cool if you went and check that out. I've already gotten quite a bit of feedback. I joked in my interview with Greg that if you don't have at least a couple people calling you names and telling you're the worst mock drafter ever, then you're not doing it right. So I can assure you I have no shortage of those. And I guess that means that at least I got a little something correct. So please go check that out. And without further ado, let's bring on the longtime NFL scout and author of the 2017 NFL Draft Magazine and Magazine Update, Greg Gabriel.
And we've got Greg Gabriel back on the podcast. Nice enough to join us again this week as we close in on the NFL Draft next Thursday. Greg, you survived your first mock draft over at ProFootballWeekly.com. How do you feel? You made it through your one and only of the season.
I felt good about it. I'm feeling very confident that I'm going to be right on the quarterbacks. Not necessarily right to where, you know, connected to the teams, but right as far as four going in the first, and they could very well be gone in the first half of the first.
All right, so let's do a quick recap for our listeners, and they better head over to ProFootballWeekly.com, and obviously they can check out your mock draft and all of our other great coverage over there. But you had Watson going first off the board at number 3 to the Bears, I believe. Patrick Mahomes, actually, the second off the board at number 6 to the Jets. Number 3, Trubisky to the Bills at 10. And then Deshone Kizer at number 12 to the Browns. So just sort of your general thinking on how those guys came off the board and when they did.
Well, you know, I feel very confident the Bears are going to take a quarterback with their first-round pick. Now, whether that's at 3 or they move back, that remains to be seen. You got to have a partner who wants to move up into that 3 slot in order to move back. But I think from all indications and from people I've talked to, that it's a good bet that they select a quarterback at that spot. The Jets have an obvious need. The Browns have an obvious need. The Cardinals have an obvious need. I didn't have the Cardinals taking one there because the quarterbacks were gone. But I just think all those teams have an obvious need at the position. And I think that what's going to happen and what's going on in meetings that, you know, happening now, when they're talking about selecting a quarterback is that the conversation is going to be, if we don't take one in the first, there might not be one in the second.
Right.
And we got to get one, so we better take one first. And in this draft, which is deep in a lot of positions, you can still come back in the second round and get a good positional player that's a very good player.
Who is you wrote in your mock, Greg, that Pat Mahomes is as hot as any player in the draft right now, has kind of helped his cause in the postseason. Is it what he's done to help himself, though, or are teams kind of catching on to his film? How do you sort of explain his rise? And then it seems to me that maybe you've warmed a little bit more on Deshaun Watson in the postseason. Is that accurate? Or kind of tell me a little bit about those two guys and those sort of thoughts.
Okay, well, in the case of Mahomes, I think when you look at Texas Tech offense, at the Texas Tech offense, you know, that scares you a little bit.
Yep.
And then the history of quarterbacks in the National Football League that come out of that particular style offense, there hasn't been any real success yet. And RG3 played at Baylor, a similar type offense. You know, he had some success in his first year and then went downhill. But for the most part, you know, guys in that system haven't had success. Now, in saying that, what has helped Mahomes is the tape isn't going to change. He hasn't played a game since, November, December, mm-hmm. but he has done extremely well in interviews, in workouts, and on the board. Mm-hmm. And that's where the comfort level with coaches and the player has gone up. You know, and they're looking at him as the person, and can he take on the rigors of an NFL offense, learn it quickly, carry it over to the field, be a leader, and become a good National Football League quarterback. And I think the general consensus is yes, from at least a lot of the people that have spent time with him in the past month, say month or 6 weeks.
Well, that's exciting to hear because it's easy to see the arm talent on tape, obviously, and a guy who can make all the throws. So I guess that kind of does help it all add up. And, Greg, what about Watson? I mean, there were some reports coming out of his pro day that it could have been a little bit better. Is it a similar thing with him where he seems to be impressing teams privately and then they can stack that on top of, obviously, his decorated college career?
Well, again, I think it's the interviews, the meetings, the board work that help him as much as anything. And really, more so than any other position in the draft, the private meetings, the classroom work with a quarterback is extremely important. And that's where coaches really get a comfort level with the player. You know, you're spending an inordinate amount of time with them. It's not, you know, 15 minutes like you spend at the combine. Mm-hmm. It's hours of time. And when you have him in the classroom and you're having him explain what he had to do at Clemson as far as his reads and progressions that he went through, which were minimal, and then you draw stuff up on the board from your own offense, see how quickly he picks it up, how he can relate it back to you, and then carry it over onto the practice field to the workout. Those things have all been impressive with him, and his maturity, his leadership, you know, the intangibles. I think that gives teams a comfort level. Now, you know, as to who's going to be the first one off the board, second one off the board, you know, I think you could put them all together in a pot, throw the names up in the air, whichever one lands first could be the first quarterback. It's going to be how each team feels individually about, you know, the player, and do they fit into their scheme as they think is the best player.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. There's no question, Greg, that that's going to make this intrigue kind of continue to build over these final 7 days or whatever it is. And, yeah, I mean, it's just it's fascinating how we all know beauty is in the eye of the beholder, but I can't remember another class where you had as many as four quarterbacks all at least in the conversation for maybe some teams as being the top prospects. So it is going to be a ton of fun. Greg, before we talk a little bit of receivers and corners, we did a lot of safety, running back, tight end talk on the podcast last week. I just want to ask, and it's kind of half in jest, but did you have any other kind of an epiphany is a strong word, but was there any other constructive parts of doing a mock draft yourself? I know you don't love doing them, but sometimes it helps us too. It's an exercise to help help us kind of envision how the board may play out. Was there anything else that kind of jumped out at you or maybe surprised you a little bit as you were doing yours?
Well, what surprises me is how many good players are left at the end of the first round.
Yes, absolutely.
And so that tells you the depth of the draft and that, you know, if you're picking in the top 10 of the second round, you're getting a real good football player. Now, saying that, this thought came to my mind actually a few times because, you know, when I started off as a scouting director for the Bears, the draft was 2 days. We had the first three rounds on Saturday and then the last four rounds on Sunday. And if you had a high fourth round pick, that pick was worth its weight in gold as far as teams trying to trade up and get that pick. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you sit back, you reshuffle your board, you see what you got, you know, what you need and who are the best players left, and then you're really thinking about it. Then all of a sudden, you know, there's a player that jumps out and teams, or a couple players that jump out, and teams want to, you know, try to get one of those players that they can. And in the fourth round, the cost of getting a player isn't, you know, that expensive.
Right.
And so if you're picking, say, in the top five or top six in the fourth round, you know, you've got the potential to trade down and get a lot for one of those picks. Well, now with the draft being 3 days at length, that same thing happens in the second round.
Yep.
You're reshuffling the deck, so to speak. At the end of the first day, you have all day Friday before the draft begins again Friday night. Teams are looking at their board and they're saying, I want this guy, and they're going to make calls to those first teams that have the first few picks in the second round and try to, you know, see if they can get one of those picks, and they might overpay to do that. So right. It really happens twice in the draft the way it's set up now. It can happen on Friday night and again Saturday morning.
Yeah, great point by you, and it's funny you mentioned that because I did my first ever two-round mock this week, and I had a lot of fun with it for some of the reasons you just mentioned, kind of the host of good talent that remains after the first round is over, and I kind of rode in my little skinny at pick number 33, which was Adoree Jackson, to the Browns. I said it just the way you did, is the phone lines are going to be lit up because there's some really good players left, and I think it's a better segue. I was going to talk receivers first, but let's do corners first because we're on Adoree Jackson, and
let me just say one other thing too, and that's, I think when you get to around 20 and you go from 20 to 40, there's not a huge drop off in the player you're getting. Obviously different position, different name, but when you look at the talent level is going to be similar in the eyes of a lot of people. So now it becomes, like we just said before, beauty is in the eyes of the beholder and who's the player you want, and that sometimes can create value. And I think it also means that the players are almost interchangeable in that area. Like when you're doing a mock and you're filling in names from 20 to 32, well, you could probably use 20 names to put in those 12 slots and still come out pretty good.
Sure.
You know, just changing them around any which way you want.
All right, yeah, and you made me feel a little bit better, Greg, because I've been called every name in the book over the past 48 hours for having guys like T.J. Watt and Obi Melifonwu fall into the second round. I'm told I should quit my job immediately because I don't know what I'm doing, but you're making me feel at least a little bit better.
Don't read the comment section.
Yeah, right. And then I was going to say, did you have some kind of testy people after you were done? Because if you don't have at least a few people calling you names, that means you have to go do your mock again.
That's true. Well, hey, you know, everybody's a genius when it comes to mock drafts, and they got their favorites. And, you know, over the years when I do my one annual, I think I've been called every name in the book, but that's part of the business, I guess.
Yeah, it's just funny because by definition, it's called a mock draft. So it's fun how all the readers tell you there's only one right answer here, there's only one wrong answer. But no, it's all in good fun, and obviously we do it for the readers. So I'm just messing around with them. Greg, let's talk Adoree Jackson for a minute. We're going to talk a little bit of corners. An exciting prospect, obviously, because he can, you know, assuming he helps not only on defense, but in the right mind, probably going to have a chance to be a gadget player on offense and a dynamic returner. How do you weigh all that when you're kind of stacking his value? I mean, there has to be some added value to him because he can do so much, of course, right?
Well, the player that comes to mind is Devin.
I knew you were going to say
Hester,
that.
And only because of the value at different positions. I think Adoree is a better corner than Devin was. Devin was, for lack of a better word, immature as a player, and I'm not saying that as a person, but you know, he played so many different positions when he was at the University of Miami that he never really got comfortable or was able to get comfortable at any one position, because he played running back, receiver, and defensive back, as well as doing the return, and the common denominator was he was an outstanding return guy. So now it was when we drafted him with the Bears in the second round, it's, you know, where are we going to play him? And, you know, the last position he played was at corner, but then, you know, as he was learning the corner position, and then we had him running scout team as a receiver, not too many guys could cover him. So then we made the decision to put him over, you know, on the offensive side of the ball, which he, you know, he wasn't a great receiver, but he was a good NFL receiver and probably the best returner of all time. Right. And when you have that talent like Adoree Jackson has as a returner, he can be a difference maker in the game, can change field position, can score points. You know, that in itself moves up his value. Even though he might not be ready to step in and play right away at the corner position, his return skills push him up and I think make him a lock for that high part of the second round.
And Greg, we're already being unfair, and I'm kidding, because I had it in my notes. I'm glad you mentioned Devin Hester, because I was going to ask you otherwise. But the other name I have written down here, and again, we're talking about Hall of Famers, so Adoree Jackson, we apologize. Hopefully you can become a fraction of the player these guys are. But is Charles Woodson, I mean, already a little more advanced on defense and has that ability to be a two-way guy? Is that totally outrageous or along those lines as well?
Well, when you look at Woodson's size, he was so much bigger. You know, Adoree Jackson's, what, 5'10"?
Okay.
You know, Woodson was a bigger player, more physical player than Adoree is, more so than Devin was. And so, yeah, I think it might be a little bit unfair as far as a positional player. But
sure,
now when you
sure.
look at the return work, you know, I think Adoree Jackson's got rare return skills, and wherever he goes, he's going to step in and be the number one return guy. And yeah, if he doesn't get too mind-boggled in learning defense and some, you know, some gadget plays on offense, you know, he'll be able to give you a few snaps a game on offense, and defenses are going to have to beware.
Sure. You know, Adoree Jackson seemed to have dodged a bullet with the knee that I guess didn't turn out to be too serious. I know he suffered an injury in the bowl game. Sidney Jones, obviously not as lucky with his pro day injury. Just a devastating thing to rupture the Achilles and have it set him back. But I'm actually, the reason I'm going with that segue is because another note I have here is on his teammate, Kevin King. I know he is kind of, to me, I'm seeing him really up and down different boards, and I know he's one of those postseason climbers, but how do you view Kevin King and where his ceiling is? Everyone knows that outrageous size for the position, and looks like he's got some serious press potential in the NFL coming out of Washington. What do you think of Kevin King?
Well, teams are always looking for tall, long corners, and they're very, very difficult to find, and, you know, for us being here in Chicago, the player that comes to mind is Peanut Tillman, who was 6'2", with great length, and not quite as big as King was, but these guys, you know, if they have the work ethic that Charles Tillman had, then, you know, I use that word weight and gold, but it's really the right word or the right phrase to use with tall corners, because they match up so well against the taller receivers, and especially with that great length they have. So they're going to end up going higher than they might deserve. They might be, you know, footwork might be a little bit raw with his footwork, but good coaching will take care of that. But, I think he can step in as a press corner in a lot of different schemes. I see him more as a press guy than a man-off guy. A lot of it has to do with his height and length. He's not going to be as quick-footed as some of these guys, say, like the guy we just talked about, Adoree Jackson, who's only 5'10".
Yep.
But you can put these guys, you know, have them jam a receiver at the line of scrimmage and get in their hip pocket, and these guys turn out to be really good pros. So, he's going to go high. What's interesting about the corner class as a whole is that I don't think there's a big separation between, say, the first five or six as far as who's the best and who's the sixth, but it's really how they're going to come off the board is what is a team looking for and what's their defensive scheme. What are they asking the player to do in that particular scheme? Are they going to be a predominantly off team? Are they a zone team? Are they a press team or whatever? And the player that fits that mold the best, fits their mold the best, is going to be the player they select if they have a need at that position.
Sure, sure. Okay, so then you may have just answered this question already, but I was curious. Clearly you are. another interesting kind of cornerback dynamic that I've been kind of picking up on in recent weeks. Marshon Lattimore continues to be our highest rated corner, the stud out of Ohio State. He's got rare speed and terrific size and looks like he can play in you know, he looks like he's got some positional flexibility. But I know that his teammate, is it Jerrion? Jerrion Conley?
You know, I'm not sure. I think it's I say Jerrion, but Jerrion Conley.
I think it's Jerrion too.
You know, he could be the second corner off the board.
Okay, and that was my question though. But you haven't seen him do enough. I've seen some spots. It's all the Twitter experts. Some guys saying Conley's better than Lattimore. We're not quite going that far. We just think they're both pretty rare kids that may have a chance.
You
to
know,
really
in all honesty, Arthur, there are some NFL people that like Conley better because there's some facets of his game that he does better. You know, they each have strong points and weak points, and then it gets back to what I was just saying. It becomes, you know, who fits your scheme the best.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. So let me ask you then, what's tougher? Is it tougher to teach a guy who you know can press to fit into a zone defense? Or is it vice versa? A guy who's really instinctive, really good in zone, try and teach him to be a bump and run guy. I know it's easier said than done to even ask that question, but kind of take us through that.
Well, obviously in zone, it's going to be anticipation, receiver awareness, that type of thing, and your patience, you know, in a zone coverage scheme. I think actually the toughest thing for corner to do, a lot of colleges don't do it that much. They might be man or they might be zone, but it's to play man off. And that can be a difficult thing because you've got to have the sudden hips, you got to have the quick feet, because you're playing, it's almost like half zone, half man type of a scheme, and it can be more difficult to play. So there, again, it's the private workouts that help teams get the answer to that, and also some of the board work when they get them, as far as, you know, do they feel they're smart enough to do everything that they're going to be asked to do within their particular scheme.
Interesting. And my last one on corners for you, kind of another general one. I heard Mike Zimmer say at the combine, obviously Mike Zimmer loves to play a lot of man-to-man coverage. That's what he asks his corners to do, big, lengthy guys who can press. But he said that after quarterbacks and offensive linemen, both wide receivers and corners are two of the tougher positions to draft a rookie and ask him to come in and contribute right away. Maybe he was trying to cover himself a little bit because Laquon Treadwell was a huge disappointment as a rookie. But what do you think about that statement in terms of those positions and kind of the step up in terms of responsibilities and as the speed of the game increases so much?
Well, I think it could be true, but again, it has to do with what you're asking the player to do.
Yep.
And is it a limited type of thing, or is your defense so complex that you're asking him to do, you know, a variety of things, and mentally he's just not ready to do it?
Mm-hmm.
And then when that happens, when the player doesn't feel confident, you know, he might time 4.35, but he's all of a sudden playing 4.6 because he's thinking too much on the field instead of just reacting and anticipating.
What do you think about the quote-unquote discount guys, whether for injury or speed deficiency? You've got Fabian Moreau out of UCLA, has the torn pectoral. We mentioned Sidney Jones and the Achilles injury. And then I continue to be pretty intrigued by T's Tabor out of Florida just because the tape is so good, even though the 40 time doesn't match up. Any of those guys kind of jump out at you as, wow, we may end up getting a great player at a great value?
Let's go with Moreau and Sidney Jones first. That's going to be a medical decision.
Of course.
And your doctors are going to say, look, he's going to be good to go at such and such a time, whether it's beginning a training camp, going to miss most of his rookie season or whatever. And I think with the Achilles, it's going to be a longer wait than with the pec muscle.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, how they come off the board, again, is going to be up to the medical staff. and then they're going to roll the dice, because you might be getting a player that you have to redshirt for a good part of the season, or maybe the whole season.
Right.
As far as Tyus Tabor, I think what you're going to end up seeing with him is he's going to go to a team that is predominantly a zone team, and he's going to be able to play in that where speed doesn't necessarily have to be the most important trait. It's more anticipation and instincts, and he is instinctive. He does have great anticipation, has great ball skills, but he can't run, and he's proven that not once but twice. In fact, it really shocked me that, you know, he ran 4.65 at the combine and then comes back and runs 4.74 at his pro day, and that was like, wow, you know, what's the real time? So I think on a lot of draft rooms around the NFL that his card time is going to probably be 4.7 or 4.69.
Okay, interesting. Greg, we've spent a lot of time already. I do want to take just a few minutes talking wide receivers, and thank you so much. If anyone jumped in late or fast forward, I guess it's not radio, it's a podcast, so you probably didn't jump in late. But this is Greg Gabriel, our Draft Magazine author, longtime NFL scout, and always dropping the goods on this podcast and over at ProFootballWeekly.com. Greg, Western Michigan's Corey Davis, still our number one rated wide receiver. Another guy who I seem to see a variety of rankings on. How unique is his situation, not only coming from the MAC, but getting ready to enter the draft without a 40 time? How are NFL teams kind of evaluating him at this juncture? They're not evaluating anymore. You know what I mean. How do they view him?
Right,
I'm sorry.
Right. I don't know if the 40 time is going to be that important because he plays fast. Mm-hmm. And you see that every single tape you put on. So you have to anticipate that he's going to run pretty good. He gets separation, runs away from people on tape, be it they're playing a MAC team or they're jumping up and playing a higher level team during their schedule. So It's going to be, what's wrong with the ankle? And how come it's taking so long to heal? And that could hurt him a little bit come next Thursday night in the draft. And we'll find that out next week, how much it really hurt him. Is he going to be the first guy off the board, or is he going to end up in the second round? Because teams have a lot of question marks because of the ankle. But a quality player, and he should be a guy that can step in and play right away, you know, as a rookie. But in fact, just looking at wide receivers as a whole, and going back to that situation you're talking about with Mike Zimmer, I think it, you know, when I was with the Bears, we used to study the wide receivers and the productivity of wide receivers, and it used to be that it was in the end of their second year or the beginning of their third year that the light really turned on as far as them being able to play at full speed and knowing exactly what they were supposed to do within a pro offense. And that's changed in the last few years, and you've seen rookies come in and have great production. And the reason for it is, a lot of times when a rookie comes in, they're having him learn all three positions because they know he's not going to be a starter, and this is going back a few years, and they have him, you know, learn all three positions, and that's what hurts his development a little bit, because his mind is just totally out of whack with having to learn three different positions, learning how to make sight adjustments. You're not making a lot of sight adjustments in the college game, and you end up playing slow. Well, now what coaches are doing is, instead of having the player learn three positions, they're having them play one position and learn that one position really well, and it gets them up to speed a lot faster. And I think that's why we've seen the receivers play at a higher level in the last 2 years as they're coming out of the college ranks.
Interesting stuff. Greg, another one of our top-rated offensive skill position players, Ohio State's Curtis Samuel. What's his best fit in the NFL? And, well, I want you to answer that, and then I got kind of a follow-up for you.
Well, jack-of-all-trades type of guy, because he's played running back, he's played receiver, he's been productive at both. Mm-hmm. Obviously not big enough to carry the load of running back. I see him as mainly a slot receiver in the NFL, but a guy you can put back in the backfield, give him a few plays to run, and again, that's going to be an advantage to the offense, because it's going to have to make, you know, have the defense do that much more work as far as preparation. He's a game-breaker type of guy, got great speed, acceleration, very good run instincts, catches the ball well, but I think his main position will be as a slot receiver in the league.
I mocked Curtis Samuel at 34th overall to the 49ers. Probably wishful thinking, just because I hope it's a bright offensive mind like Kyle Shanahan that gets such an exciting and dynamic player like Samuel. What do you think, though? We talked about Jabril Peppers a little bit on last week's podcast. We just talked about Adoree Jackson. Are these types of players, and I'll throw Christian McCaffrey into it as well, are they reminders that regardless of how talented some guys are, that you have to have fit and you have to have teams that have a plan for some of these types of players?
A good question. And going back to when I was working in the league, we used to do that with every player we took. We had, in fact, in the meetings, we came up with a plan. Okay, if we draft this guy, this is what we plan to do with them. And the coaches are there in the meeting, so they understand. And this is, you know, this is what we expect out of him as a rookie. And that, you know, by the second year, we hope that he's this. So I think that's an important part of discussion for any player. But then when you get these guys that are multi-talented, that you can fit in at different areas of your offense, say like a McCaffrey who can play running back, he can play in the slot, you can split him out, he's got the athleticism to be a receiver and the quickness to be a receiver and the hands, obviously, and then on top of that, he can be a dynamic running back, though not a guy that's, you know, you want to carry the ball 25 times a game. My thinking with a player like him is you want to get him 20 to 25 touches a game, but that includes returns, receptions, and runs, and then he's not getting beat up, you know, like the average running back is getting beat up because of his size, but yet he's going to be a difference maker with all those touches. So, but some of these players like McCaffrey, Adoree Jackson, Samuel, these guys are special players because they can do so many things. And really the team that gets these guys is going to benefit from them because it's almost like drafting two players at once.
Yeah, no doubt. That's well said. And again, just me selfishly kind of hoping. Christian McCaffrey being like a New Orleans Saint with Sean Payton, these are the types of fits I'm looking for, just to hopefully where they can be maximized. We'll see what happens. Adam Gase, another guy who I'm sure could do some wondrous things with a Samuel or a McCaffrey. But just a few more minutes, Greg. Thank you for being so gracious with your time. Zay Jones, another fascinating player, obviously out of Eastern Carolina. I know he's had himself a really nice out of East Carolina, excuse me, and he's had himself a nice postseason. Everyone loves NFL comps, and you have an interesting one for Zay Jones. Do you see a little bit of Alshon Jeffrey? Do you think Zay Jones will have to learn to play a little bit more of a power game to really truly realize that that comparison?
Yes, and then the one thing that scares me about Zay Jones is that when I first started looking at tape, and this was really right around the Senior Bowl time, and he had that great week of practice down at the Senior Bowl, and everybody's speaking in superlatives about him, and I'm watching a tape and going, this guy's 4.65 or 4.7. He doesn't play fast, yet he finds a way to get open. Now, at the same time, you know, Alshon, well, he ran 4.47, I think, at his pro day. Didn't work out at the combine, but he jumped out of the building. He had great leaping ability, and, you know, his agility drills were pretty good, but I think he was a little bit more physical player in college than Zay is. But, and Alshon might have been a little bit more or a little bit better after the catch, even though his last year at South Carolina, he played at about 240 pounds. Right. He was way too heavy. But still, I think it is a good comp. The only problem I see with Zay is that because he doesn't play fast. Now, in saying that, he's a strider, and striders have a way of timing a lot faster than they look because they have that long stride. They're not quick steppers, so to speak. So I think, you know, he's going to be a good pro. He's a smart kid. He's going to come in and I think play right away. And I think a team that may take him if he's still available in the second round is Buffalo, his receivers coach. The receiver coach he had the last 2 years at East Carolina is now the receivers coach at Buffalo. And it just wouldn't shock me if that's who they take. And they have a need. And they're also thinking about not picking up the fifth year option on their first round pick a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting nugget for sure, and obviously the Bills have a huge need. Whether or not they pick up that option on Sammy Watkins, they need more help for that passing game. Greg, just on the way out, I'm going to kind of tee it up very generally, and I'm putting you on the spot, but hey, that's what we do sometimes on podcasts. Is there a day three name at wide receiver? We've gotten past kind of the studs. Someone that excites you that you think may represent a really nice value in, say, round four or five, maybe even later?
Well, yeah, there's a couple guys. In fact, when I originally looked at their tape, I had them in the original magazine. I had them higher, and then they didn't run as good as they played fast. The opposite of Jones. Jones doesn't look fast on tape, but he timed fast. Mm-hmm. These two guys play fast, but then they time slowly. And one is Cooper Kupp, who had a great week at the Senior Bowl, and the other is Chad Henson, wide receiver from Cal. He's an underclassman coming out. You know, he plays like a 4.45, 4.48 guy, yet he timed closer to 4.6, and the same with Cooper Kupp. In fact, he ran in the 4.6s, but yet, you know, whenever you watch them on tape, they're getting open, they get separation, they got good routes, they got outstanding hands, they're very good after the catch. You know, I don't think either one of these guys is going on. They could go third round, but I think because of their time speed and it's a stopwatch-driven position, you're going to see them go more fourth round than third round.
Okay, great stuff. And then lastly, I did lie. I just want your very quick thoughts, because you have been out in front of this since February, whenever we started working on all this stuff, January. Juju Smith-Schuster, I know you're a big fan. He's a little lower on some other boards. Just a quick breakdown of Juju Smith-Schuster, where he may fit in, and if he's going to be as good of a pro as I know you've been predicting and I'm starting to kind of catch on to now as well.
I think he's one of those, as we mentioned earlier when you were doing your talking about your mock, one of those 20 to 40 guys.
Okay.
You know, he fits into that area on team's board. He could be ranked as high as 20th, is ranked as low as 40th. Wouldn't shock me if he goes in the bottom of the first. Wouldn't shock me if he goes to the top part of the second. I just know one thing, this guy's a darn good receiver. Now that he has that tag attached to him, the USC receivers haven't done that good in the pros lately. I tried never to use that comparison. I look at the individual and the traits that the individual has, and this guy has some outstanding traits. He's a good route runner. He plays fast. He's physical. He can run after the catch. He'll go up and get it. He'll block. I mean, it's what can he do, because he does everything. I think he's going to be a superlative pro.
He's a fun guy to watch and study. Like you said, physicality is one thing that just kind of jumps off the tape, and he plays like he has bad intentions. So great stuff from Greg Gabriel, as always. We're going to have him back one more time before the draft, I promise, dropping all kinds of knowledge. Greg, it's been a lot of fun, and I know you got a lot more work to do as we kind of hunker down in the final days. So enjoy, and we'll look forward to having you back on the podcast very soon. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Arthur. Appreciate it.
Yep, thank you. That is Greg Gabriel, the author of the 2017 Draft Magazine. There is still time to go get it at profootballweekly.com.
All right, fun stuff with Greg, dropping all kinds of knowledge today on the podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. Definitely learned a lot. And one more big thank you to Loot Crate, our awesome sponsor, to Greg for being so generous with his time. And, of course, the biggest thank you of all goes to you. You keep coming back, and I keep being incredibly appreciative, and will continue to be that way. So head over to iTunes. Make sure you're subscribed to the PFW Podcast. We will be back next week for at least one more show before the draft, and we will be breaking it down wall to wall at profootballweekly.com. So don't miss any of it, and thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day. We'll talk to you soon.